All right, we have no argument on behalf of the appellee, so you have a pretty straight free ride, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Patrick Jensen, and I'm with the Montgomery County Commonwealth Attorney's Office, and I'm here representing the Commonwealth in this appeal. We believe that the trial court erred in two ways during this civil forfeiture trial. First, by holding that the Commonwealth was required to prove that this truck was used in more than one illegal drug transaction. And two, by finding that the Commonwealth failed to prove, by clear and convincing evidence, that this truck was in fact used in substantial connection to an illegal drug transaction. In essence, the trial court looked only to the number of times that this truck was used rather than the nature of that use.
Also, was the Lee case presented to the court prior to the motion to reconsider? Did the court have the opportunity to review that case?
No, Your Honor. The Commonwealth presented the Lee case in the motion to reconsider. As noted in the agreed statement of facts, following the presentation of evidence, the trial court did not hear closing arguments, simply took the matter under advisement.
I'm not implying waiver. I'm just trying to figure out if the court had a chance to...
The Lee case was presented in the Commonwealth's motion to reconsider, and then the trial court noted in denying the motion to reconsider that it considered the briefs of the parties.
And your reading of Lee is that there were two drug deals, but the only drug deal that was the predicate for using the vehicle as the target of forfeiture was the first drug deal.
Well, as noted in the facts outlined in this court's opinion in Lee, during the first drug deal, Mr. Lee was seen delivering the drugs to the individual who essentially sold them to the undercover officer, and he used the Pathfinder. There was a second drug transaction.
And he was in the vehicle at the time.
Well, it said the vehicle was present. I don't recall the opinion stating that Mr. Lee was in the vehicle, simply that the vehicle was present there, but there was no evidence presented that the vehicle was used in any way. And then, of course, you know, Mr. Lee didn't make admissions after the fact that he was a drug dealer, that he sold a substantial amount of illegal drugs.
Got my facts right. The March 15 drug deal, he drives up in the vehicle. He makes the deal after getting out of the vehicle in the parking lot. The March 24 incident was... No, the vehicle was nearby. But
the vehicle was... Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. The vehicle was seen nearby, but there was at least no evidence outlined in this court's opinion that Mr. Lee was seen driving to the vehicle for that second drug transaction. And in this court's ultimate ruling, it did uphold that forfeiture, noting that on that one occasion, the vehicle was used to transport both Mr. Lee and the illegal drugs to that illegal drug transaction. Virginia Code does allow for the forfeiture of vehicles used in substantial connection to an illegal drug transaction, and that statute, 386.22, specifically includes vehicles, and it does not require that there be more than one. As I've noted,
Language is diluted. It's not, you know, it's used in substantial connection with.
Yes, Your Honor.
So it's not necessarily that you even have to transport the drugs. I mean, you could have a failed transaction where someone is driving to it and it never is consummated, I suppose.
I think that's possible, Your Honor. Of course, in Lee, the drugs and the drug dealer were used the vehicle, in that case, to transport. The facts here, which were essentially undisputed, go a little farther. Here, Mr. Hall transported himself and the illegal drugs, which were oxycodone, in the truck. Mr. Hall remained seated in the truck.
I'm with you. I don't think we have to test out of boundaries of the statute,
yes.
But I think it seems to have a fairly broad sweep in terms of its plain language.
Yes, it does, Judge.
One last question. I wish your opponent was here to pose it to, but the way Judge Turk described the reasoning of the court, as he said, quote, the court finds the evidence establishes that the truck was used incidentally or fortuitously in the distribution of the illegal drug, period. Continuing, other than this one-time incident, comma, the Commonwealth presented no other evidence that this vehicle had been used in the sale or distribution of an illegal substance. Well, doesn't that literally mean other than this one time where it was used, there's no other one? So it seems like he's making a factual finding that it, in fact, was used.
That's the Commonwealth's position, Your Honor, and the Commonwealth's position is that that the trial court did find it was used. However, because it was only used once and not more than once, that use was incidental or fortuitous rather than substantially connected. It appears that the trial court, in looking at that sentence, other than this one time, didn't look to the nature of that truck's use.
Which is sort of ironic, as Justice McCullough points out, because in connection with this is a far more attenuated idea than actually being used. It's like a robber using a weapon to threaten someone versus, yeah, I carry a weapon along, but I don't have to use it until I need it.
Yes, sir.
Well, one thing that occurred, for instance, like if you're going to manufacture certain kinds of drugs, you need precursors.
Yes, sir.
Suppose a person's using the drug to get the precursors, but then is actually making the drugs in the shed. Well, it seems like the substantial connection would apply even though the finished product wasn't, you know, in the bed of the truck or whatever.
And I would, in that hypothetical, Your Honor, I would argue that's correct. If in this case I was out and I was driving from store to store, and at each store I was purchasing items that I was later going to take to another location for the sole intent of manufacturing a drug, then I would think that my vehicle was used in substantial connection with the manufacture of illegal
substance. Or I have someone who's a street-level dealer, but I'm the middle guy or the head guy, and I'd use a truck to drop off my dealers at different street corners so they can carry out the transactions. I mean, that's just another, you know, the legislature knows how to craft these statutes. And so at any rate, I've belabored the point.
Yes, sir. Now, then, in going back towards Lee, that was the first time, and I believe the only time, this court has actually ever considered whether a piece of property was used in substantial connection with an illegal drug transaction. And this court looked at the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals, in particular a case, U.S. versus Schifferle. And in adopting some of the language there, this court said that the intent of the statute is to remove from drug traffickers the instrumentalities employed in furtherance of the drug trade rather than property only incidentally or fortuitously associated with such criminal activity. Schifferle actually went a little bit farther in their description of substantial connection when they say that this property must be used to facilitate the commission of the crime. And what they meant, the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals meant by facilitate, is it need only make this illegal drug transaction less difficult or more or less free from obstruction or hindrance. And so I go again to the facts of this case. Mr. Hall used this truck to transport himself and the illegal drugs to the drug deal. He remained seated inside the truck conducting the drug deal, thus generally shielding himself from the public view. After the illegal drug deal was concluded, Mr. Hall drove off in the vehicle. And the trial court, again, noted that this was only incidental or fortuitous.
Hall never got out of the truck.
No, sir, he did
so
not.
The
he
deal remained. Was literally made while he's sitting in the truck.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. Now, and of course, the trial court said this was only incidental or fortuitous, and I would submit that if there had been some other property inside the truck, perhaps it was a work truck and there were some work tools, or there was a flat-screen television in the bed of the truck, I don't believe there's any way the Commonwealth could argue that that property is subject to forfeiture. That property is just there. Incidentally, it's there as kind of a non-essential, it's subordinate. It does nothing to facilitate the drug transaction. The truck, on the other hand, does. Again, Mr. Hall transported himself to this illegal drug transaction. He carried himself and the illegal drugs with him, remained seated inside of the vehicle while the deal was conducted, and then quickly left by driving off in the truck.
So aside from favorable facts, statutory plain language, binding precedent, and overwhelming persuasive precedent, is there anything else you have in your corner?
No, Your Honor. And if there's no further questions, I thank the
court. Since you have a little bit of time, I'll just ask this question.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which is probably neither here nor there. Is there any reason for us to hold this case waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court to render their opinion in Timms, which looks at whether...
I do not think so, Your Honor. Timms versus Indiana, the issue there is whether the Eighth Amendment excessive fine clause applies to the states. I would first note that our Constitution in Virginia does have an excessive fine clause. I don't believe this court has ever applied it to an in rem civil forfeiture proceeding, but Mr. Hall and his counsel never raised that below.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Call the next case.